Hello and welcome to episode 39 of the Desi Outsiders podcast. I'm Meenal.
And I'm Ankita.
And this week we have the honour to speak to Snehal Pradhan, a former Indian cricket international player.
For those of you who watched the Ladies in Blue perform on Sunday at the Women's Cricket World Cup Finals, this interview will really help you understand the nitty-gritty processes involved in helping women play at an international level. Snehal's insight into cricket and the BCCI had me on the edge of my seat for the most part.
So without further ado, let's jump right into the show. Welcome to the show, Snehal. I'm so glad we managed to catch up with you just after the Women's World Cup. I'm a sports fanatic and athlete myself, and to have a full conversation on sports and its technicalities already makes this one of my favorite interviews to date.
That's good to know.
And Snehal, I belong to that category of girls from India who had all kinds of extracurricular activities except for sports. But you know how Indians are all cricket fans and cricket is a very talked about subject in all our homes. My home was not very different, although I never grew up watching women's cricket. So, in fact, this Women's Cricket World Cup Finals last Sunday was my first ever women's cricket match. So I'm really excited for this interview. Slightly ashamed of the fact that this was my first ever women's cricket match. But we have so many questions for you.
No, you just described most of my best friends. So
yeah. Did you just say that we can be best friends?
You don't want to be Ankita's best friend.
So Snehal, let's start at the very beginning. We know that your grandmother was a big influence in your life and she encouraged you to play. She introduced you to Shubhangi Kulkarni, who was the former India captain. And it's her support that kind of led you to represent Maharashtra in the under-16 and under-19 categories. But in an interview, you said that you got almost total support from your family, which begs the question, why almost?
So that would be my grandfather.
Oh.
So basically, and it's only a half joke in the family that my grandfather wanted me to become an engineer. And probably if I was not playing cricket and, you know, cricket wouldn't take up such a huge amount of my time, I probably would have opted to study engineering. But since I wanted a course that will give me a little bit of flexibility alongside which I could manage my cricket as well, I opted for a BSc instead, which incidentally is what he did. So I'm not sure what he's disappointed about.
So, Snehal, I started playing sports from around maybe the age of 6, and that's when I first picked up my table tennis bat. I have an older brother, and most of my time playing outside and in the park was with him and his own group of friends. So, although my mom was happy that I was channeling my energy into something productive and healthy, she did have her reservations about me not being, and I quote in quotation marks, you know, being ladylike. So she would always say things like "ladki ban" from time to time, and even when I started my first year of university, she encouraged me to wear some makeup and take care of my skin and make me do all of these things, which I wasn't a big fan of. So have you personally come across any scenario similar to this, and how did it make you feel if you did come across this?
Well, I was a complete tomboy myself in my youth, and similarly, you know, the number of tomboys in the team were probably in majority, and it was somewhat, I think basically all mothers are pretty much similar. They're all like hardwired to pass on their the job of turning you into the perfect woman, almost. So, yeah, my mom did get after me from time to time, wear these clothes, wear that clothes, and I'm like, okay, fine.
Apply fair and lovely.
No, not apply fair. Okay. just make sure you apply lots of sunscreen.
So, was it just your mom then, Snehal, or was there anybody else in your family or your friends who made these comments?
Well, everybody was concerned when I came back from a tournament really tanned that I wasn't taking care of my skin, but yeah. Not because of my skin getting dark. They knew it was a tan, basically.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They had no problem with me being dark skin. They just thought I'm not taking care of my skin, which was, yeah, okay, fine. So my mom was also pretty much like that. She's like, you're not taking care of your skin, you're not eating enough, and you're not taking care of your hair, stuff like that. But it wasn't about, you know, it wasn't so much about being the perfect woman as such. She would like it when I dress up. She would like it when I... And as I grew up, I started liking those things as well.
Mm.
But, you know, not as much as maybe my cousin sister.
Oh, okay.
So well, my grandmother's also a seamstress, as in she stitched most of her own clothes when she was in her early adulthood, and she's done a lot of stitching for the entire family. So then she would go on these elaborate stitching projects of making something really fancy, and I would be like, no. And my cousin sister would, yeah, lap them up completely.
Okay. Well, they did go to use in the end, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So at the beginning of this year, Snehal, I played an indoor cricket tournament in Germany. And I was very happy to receive the warm welcome from all the male players because story of my life and possibly story of your life, I was the only girl playing. And of course, there were a lot of testosterone in the venue during the weekend and the teams were very competitive. So in one of the matches, we played against a team from Munich. And they were all British expats, so you can imagine how loud and aggressive they must have been. And as my team were batting, to my surprise, the captain actually gave me a bat and said, you know what, Meenal, go ahead and give it a go. So in this tournament, we had to retire at 25 runs. So I didn't play any fancy shots, or, you know, just trying to tap the ball and get as many singles as possible. And I was at 20 runs, and these British guys were getting quite pissed off because I was just comfortably playing and I wasn't getting out, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So they decided to play dirty, and one of the fielders said to me, he said, oh, Meenal, you're just tapping the ball. Are you too pussy to hit it hard? And I was pretty angry, but instead of reciprocating that or saying anything back, in a total casual way, I just said, I just decided to hit the ball a bit harder and try hit a boundary. And then I just said to him, so what did you call me again? And honestly, Snehal, that really just sums up my life playing cricket. I guess you can say I play at the village level, you know, very nothing fancy, but it's still extremely soul-crushing when you're the last one to get the bat, like I was, or when you're given one pity over to bowl when you're fielding. And when I'm invited to play cricket now, my first instinct is usually no. And it's not because I don't love the game, I don't enjoy playing. I enjoy playing, I love it. But men can be quite condescending. And because nobody's willing to help, it makes it worse. You know, I would rather men encourage me more and say, hey, Meenal, why don't you try this? Why? Or even give me tips to be better. But instead, they have this sort of, you know, base level mindset where they're like, well, she's not going to be great anyway. We'll give her a bat just because she's here.
Mm-hmm.
And did this happen to you as well when you were younger? And I mean, does this still happen to you when you play a game with some of your friends?
So I think it started off like that playing with the boys will essentially be indulgent. All right, fine. Let's give her a go kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But then once you start playing, or rather this was my experience, so once I started playing and once they realized that I was good, they kind of respected me a little bit more.
Right.
And then after that, most of the cricket I played with boys after that was whereas I would be maybe a 19-year-old or a 22-year-old playing with younger boys, because as girls grow older and boys grow older, the power element in the boys game really exponentially grows up. So then to be at the same, as in, you know, it's no use me playing with the under-19 boys because when I go back to a girls tournament, the ball isn't that fast.
Okay.
So if I want match practice, I play with the under-16 boys, even though I'm 25 or whatever age I am. So generally, I'm playing with boys I'm a lot older than, and they generally give me, you know, the DB position.
Right.
So that helps. Probably it's an Indian thing that, you know, you don't talk badly to somebody who's older than you, or you don't talk badly to a girl. Which is why I haven't had the kind of experience you had in just, you know, a few experiences in the game.
Because whenever I've played either with boys my age or just men generally, like, you know, who are older than me. So, and most of these times, most of these guys actually just want to win.
Yeah.
So I've had this is the experience that I've had, and I was just wondering if you had the same, but I'm quite happy to know that you haven't.
Yeah, most of my experiences with boys have been very positive.
Okay.
But 95% of the experiences have been like that. I remember one of my very first experiences when I started out at a boys' cricket club was that the coach asking me to hide my ponytail under my hat because he didn't want it seen that a woman was practicing, or a girl, you know, must have been 12, was practicing at his ground. But then that was it. And after that, probably at age, how old was I, 28 or something, when I was playing with the boys team in a club match in Mumbai, and the opposition refused to play because I was the only girl in the team. That was mean, and I was damn pissed, and I took it up with my coach and the club, and we incidentally met that team again in the final. By that time, our club had a word with them, and they're like, no way, she's going to play. So I did play the second game. These are pretty much the outliers I've had. Most of the boys I've played with have always been welcoming, and some of them are still friends. So it's nice.
I was in London last summer, and I was invited with a friend, a male friend of mine, to play a cricket game. And we told the, so they had two spots available. So my male friend and myself, I mean, we could have got into the team. But when the other team found out that the second player was a girl, they said, no, sorry, we won't accept that. And Snail, this is not even a league, a competition, nothing. This is a Sunday friendly game in the middle of a pitch in London or whatever. And they said, we have two spots, but we want to give them both to men.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, so this is, I'm actually very happy for you, Snail. I'm glad you haven't had the experiences that I've had. So
it actually counterintuitively seems to help being a woman in India.
It does.
That is very surprising to you.
Yeah, because, you know, women are different, is hardwired into their brain, but always be polite to women and never swear in front of women and always consider women who are older than you, your sisters, is also hardwired into the culture.
Yeah, the Didi approach that you talked about, that really works, because little boys are very respectful towards all their Didis in
school. Man, I should have played in India.
Also, going back to how Meenal's mom used to say ladki ban, and I'm sure many other Indian sportswomen have also heard this growing up, I wanted to ask you, you've spoken to many women in cricket and many women in sports in general from all around the world. So do you think that this roadblock of requiring girls to be more feminine in the traditional sort of sense of the term, do you think that's a purely desi cultural thing? Do you, for example, think that a member of the English or Australian women's team was told as a child to act or walk more like a woman?
I don't know. But if I make a very uneducated guess, I'm pretty much going to guess from what I've seen in, you know, movies and about Western culture and about maybe England and Australia. This is a very uneducated guess that when they're kids, most moms will probably get after their young girls to let keep on, so to speak.
Oh, so it's a universal thing, you'd say?
This is a very uneducated case. Yeah. I really can't say for other countries. But this is just based on what I'm seeing in movies and stuff like that. But I think after a point, every kid reaches a point and every parent reaches a point where they know, okay, fine, you know, this is what she wants to do, she'll do it.
And along those same lines, I mentioned earlier how my parents encouraged me into all kinds of extracurriculars from a young age. I've done almost everything, starting from singing, dancing, art lessons and whatnot. And this is quite a common phenomenon where I come from. But the weird thing is that our parents never really considered sports for us at the time. So when my parents sent me to dance classes so that I could have exercise and fitness in my life, somehow they never considered enrolling me in a sports club. And it's very interesting to note now how there's such a huge disparity in opportunity to even find out whether or not you're good at a sport simply because of your gender. So what do you think we can do at this point to give all kids, both boys and girls, an equal opportunity when it comes to sports to discover their talents?
That's an interesting question and probably one which I hadn't faced, because when we were kids, my parents would allow us to pretty much do whatever we wanted. So I gravitated towards all the sports, my younger brother gravitated towards all the arts, quite opposite to the stereotypes.
Yeah.
And we never had a lack of opportunity in the sense that my parents never said, no, you don't go to sports because you're a girl. But yeah, I do realize this probably does happen in a lot of places, even in urban and rural India. I think it's probably down to a little bit down to the clubs themselves, as in sports clubs need to have women's teams and advertise the fact that they have women's teams, because there's that saying, you can't be what you can't see. So unless young girls and the parents of those girls see that, oh yeah, women can play cricket, and there is a club nearby which has women's cricket programs, or for the same for other sports, it's difficult. It's difficult for that mindset to change. You know, you can hope that parents will, it's totally up to the parents otherwise, to really just open up a little bit and explore new possibilities beyond the stereotypes.
And Snail, not just advertising the fact that there are academies or opportunities for girls to be playing in the club, I think that even schools should be doing a lot more, don't you think? Because,
yes.
I mean, I don't know what it's like in India so much, but in Europe at least, physical education and fitness is very important. You know, that's probably given in some schools at least more priority than even mathematics and science. But when I was a kid and I was in school, cricket was taught to boys and girls together as a class.
Mm-hmm.
And as girls as well, we were encouraged to play with the boys. And, you know, our coaches used to tell us, like, you know, there might not be a girls team, but you can still play with the boys. So there was always that opportunity over there just lying for us. And I don't think, I mean, do you have that in India?
No, you're absolutely right. Schools are the first point of contact with sport for most kids. So it does need to start from schools. And unfortunately, sports in general is so sidelined in schools, not just women's sport, and women's sport even more so. Of course, it's been a long time since I was in school, but my own experience is that we had a boys' team and I just walked into it, essentially. Nobody stopped me. Nobody said I couldn't go. But at the same time, nobody said I could go. It was just because I knew I wanted to play cricket that I went. But it is something that needs to happen in India, and it probably doesn't happen in that, you know. Most kids are pushed actively towards sport, and it is equally made clear to the kids that whether you're male or female, you can have a go at the sports. Sports in general, just by being called an extracurricular activity, it gives you the idea of where it stands on the pecking order of everything in the school system.
I studied in India, Snehal, and I remember from personal experience how we had PT sessions once or twice a week, and what we had to do was go stand out in the sun, and there was this PT physical exercise sort of thing, which ended with a birdie birdie clap clap exercise, and then the boys all just went off to play football or whatever, and the girls were, there was no proper coaching, like there were no proper teams, there was no kind of encouragement to join a team and start playing a sport, and the girls were just asked to do whatever they wanted to do, pick up a ball if they wanted to pick it up. So most girls just sat in a corner gossiping while the boys went and played football or cricket or whatever, and we had to fight to get these balls if we wanted to. So some of my friends and I wanted to play volleyball or we wanted to play dodgeball, and we would have to go fight these boys to get the balls because there were limited resources, there wasn't a lot of encouragement. So yeah, I totally get the whole school point of view here.
It was quite similar. As in those ridiculous hand-raising exercises during PT was something that I grew up with.
Yeah.
But, and after that, we were left pretty much to play on our own. But the bunch of girls I was with, barring maybe about 10% of them, would all actively play, given a chance. We wouldn't play football. We had this own game. We had this game of ours called Round Runs, which I think is similar to Rounder, what they call in the West.
Oh, we play, I know what you mean. It's like a mixture of baseball and cricket, right?
Baseball, it's basically softball played with a football, and instead of using a bat, you hit it with your hand.
Okay, no, we didn't play that.
But at the same time, I remember when I was studying in Delhi, and this was like from my first standard to fourth standard, we were given proper like volleyball, baseball coaching. We were encouraged to run. So there was more of a curriculum involved in physical education. That didn't happen in Kerala, but it happened in Delhi.
Yeah, it's very mixed. It's very mixed. It really depends upon the schools. Some schools do take sports seriously.
Is any action being done to change that now, Snehal?
Oh, no. The education system has pretty much bigger things to worry about.
Yeah, like creating more engineers in India, right?
No, in general, the education system in India is screwed up. So if I was given the choice, I would, you know, probably reduce the number of exams first and then encourage sports, because the pressure on kids nowadays is just crazy from what I read and from what I hear. And my youngest brother is 11 years younger than me, so he tells me some stories from when he was in school. There is too much pressure on the entire education system. It needs to be remodeled overall, not just sport. But yeah, sport needs to become a part of an organized curriculum so that, you know, that's the first place where children are exposed, and if they have a talent, they can find it.
And Snehal, we read that Mithali, the Indian captain, became a cricketer, we can say almost by accident, because she mentions how she would play cricket with her brother because she would be sitting around at home and her dad would just pull her along because, well, she wasn't doing anything else. And as her dad was training her brother with the hopes of becoming a cricket player, it turns out that Mithali was the one who became the cricket player and not her brother. So I guess we can say Mithali did become a cricket player sort of by accident. And do you feel this is what happens in most cases? I mean, for example, we know Serena and Venus Williams started training with their dad at the age of 6, and this was a deliberate decision to make them world-class players. There was a full plan panned out for them. And do you think there are very few women in India whose parents deliberately plan out a future for their daughter to become a world-class sports player?
Well, the Mithali Raj example is kind of fitting there, in the sense that once her father discovered that she had a talent for cricket, he pretty much decided that she would become, you know, the best cricketer she could be, and put in place a plan for her. But beyond that, no, I don't think this exists. I don't think this culture, this even the thought exists that, okay, fine, I'm going to my child is going to become the best so-and-so sports player in the world. It's always sports is something is developed parallel to education. And if at the point where you're nearing adulthood, you have the chance to take it up professionally, okay, fine, then you can go. But in India, I don't think I will see a single case where sport is developed at the cost of education. Actually, having said that, it's happened in my family. My cousin brother plays football, but his parents, once they realized that, you know, his future lies in sport, they pulled him out of the regular education system and they put him into the national open schooling system, which has more flexibility. So that he can basically concentrate on sports because they realize that his career does not lie in academics. But again, my family and people like that are the minority. Most people's parents will not say, okay, fine, this person is going to become the best cricketer or the best sports person in the world. So the other point I realized in this question was, I recently read an article about the England women's team who eventually won the World Cup. And it was interesting to note that only one of the 15 players did not have a brother.
Right. Oh.
Yeah, which tells you, in most cricketing origin stories you read, it's this, the brother is a pretty central figure. It's often the brother going to practice and the sister sometimes accompanying him that discovers this sport, discovers the liking for the sport. So that's a very powerful driving force in India where, you know, most of the boys play cricket by default. And because their brother is playing cricket, the girls want, their sisters want to play along with them. And that's how a lot of people discover cricket. A lot of women discover cricket.
I have an interesting question for Meenal now.
Okay.
Do you think you would have gone into sports if your brother was not in the picture?
I would have gone into sports if my friend circle, like if I had friends who were into athletics or into sports. But if it wasn't for my brother, Snail, actually, you're right, this is a big moment of realization for me. I wouldn't have done any of it because I followed Akhil everywhere.
Yep.
And my dad would take me along because I was bored at home. And actually, Snail, I remember when I mentioned earlier that I picked up my table tennis bat at the age of 6, right? And that was because Akhil went to, so my brother, his name is Akhil, and he went to table tennis practice one day and he was 10 years old and they don't allow anybody to play below the age of 8 because of the obvious reason that you're too short to even reach the table.
Okay.
So I tagged along with him at the age of 6 and the coach was like, look, well, she can't play. But I just begged the coach and said I really wanted to play and I started playing from then. But if it wasn't for that moment, I don't think I'd be playing table tennis right now. So, wow. Yeah. I'm like questioning my whole life right now. What would I be doing?
Also, while we were watching the World Cup final last Sunday, Meenal made an interesting observation. We were discussing the different backgrounds of all the different players, not just of the Indian team, but also, you know, the English players. And we realized that we'd not even heard of half these female players from India. You know, forget about their backgrounds. We hadn't even heard their names that much. But during the IPL this year, we heard countless, like, rags to riches stories of a lot of male cricket players. And it's especially interesting because, like we just discussed, in most cases of women in sports, not many people intentionally encourage them to pursue a career in sports. It happens accidentally because of a brother sometimes. And in most cases, women have to jump through far more hoops to finally make it. So I bet that their stories would be just as interesting, if not more interesting than those of the men in our IPL team. So where are these stories? Because even on our blog, Feminism India, none of our writers follow cricket. So it's difficult for us to have someone covering the World Cup. Where do you think the root of this problem really lies? Where do these stories go? Why are they not getting as much coverage?
Well, that's a good point because before the World Cup, I did a series of profiles on each of the 15 girls who were in the Indian team. Pretty much for, you know, viewers who had, like you said, never heard their names before and just wanted to know more about their backstories, where they've come from, etc. And it shocked me how much that thread really got a lot of traction on Twitter, which really told me the same story that, yeah, most of the people don't know who these players are. And it comes down, one of the big reasons behind this is it comes down to the star-based fan following of sport and mostly cricket in India. So cricket is not by the bulk of people followed because it's a beautiful game. It's followed because they're in love with Sachin Tendulkar or because they're in love with Yuvraj Singh. It's a very star-based, persona-based, it's almost like, you know, the film star fan attitude is almost crossed over into cricket. So most people don't care about women's playing cricket because they don't really care about cricket. They just care about the stars who are playing cricket. So when women do play cricket and they, you know, the minor matches like a bilateral series outside of a world tournament, nobody pays attention because there's no star power involved. But when this tournament, the Indian team really did well, they became those stars. And that has really contributed to the popularity of this tournament, that, wow, all of a sudden, wow, we have Indian team players who are now star quality athletes because they have done well in a global tournament. So it's unfortunate that most people won't appreciate them for all the cricket they've played for those 10-15 years before that. But because this tournament, they really did well, suddenly the media attention is gone. So I think the media attention is down to not just the stepmotherly or stepdaughterly treatment given to women in sport, but also because of the star-based media culture.
Do you have a favorite story about how any particular Indian woman made it big in sports?
Ah, okay.
You can talk about yourself too, Snehal.
No, the thing is, you don't see a lot of stories like Mary Kom, where, you know, you have to fight your family to get into sport, because even to get to a cricket ground or to get to a training pitch, you need family support. So all the stories of those kids who could have played for India but haven't, because they don't have family support, haven't happened yet. So my belief is that this Indian team is a team of exceptions. This Indian team is a team who have got it lucky that they have families supportive enough to get them into cricket training. But there are countless other stories which, you know, could be rags to riches stories, extreme struggle stories, where the girls have to fight their families to get into sport, but they don't make it because, you know, fighting a family to get into sport is something very difficult in India. And as to my favorite story, the Indian women's team actually has a number of stories of girls from small towns. And those are probably my favorite stories. There's Ekta Bisht from Almora, there's Rajeshwari Gaikwad from Bijapur, there's Smriti Mandana from Sangli, there's Veda Krishnamurthy, who's now a city girl, but she's from Kadur in Karnataka. So these, and invariably, kids who have grown up in the country, away from the big cities, are also naturally better athletes. These kids are naturally stronger than kids like me who have grown up in the cities. So it's their stories that I like. It's their stories that amazes me as to how much talent there is in the smaller towns or the smaller cities. And it's just waiting to be tapped.
And are they generally stronger? As you said, that most players who come outside of the city are generally stronger. Is it because of their lifestyle?
This is completely based on my anecdotal observations.
Okay.
But yes. Naturally, they are stronger. I don't have any actual evidence to back this up. This is just my observation. But yeah, naturally, they are stronger.
That would make a good scientific experiment, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Pretty much the whole of India knows this as a fact.
Mm.
But I don't have the facts.
Their proof, yeah. But do you think that a women's IPL isn't happening just yet for financial reasons, Snehal? And do you think that, it's not happening because it might not bring enough money to cricket, or maybe the media houses don't want to air it live on TV because the ratings will be very low?
It's not happening for a number of reasons, and some of those reasons are the right reasons. Like, I am one of those who will not join the chorus of people asking for an immediate women's IPL, because I don't think we're ready. And this isn't the fault of women's cricket in India. So women's cricket in India has been under the BCCI for the last more than 10 years. Women's cricket in India could have been ready for the IPL now had the groundwork been done in the last 10 years. For example, we still don't have an under-16 tournament. Until a couple of years ago, there was just the under-19 and the senior interstate tournaments. Then there were a few interzonal tournaments, there are a few three-day tournaments that have come in. Last year, an under-23 category came in. But we don't have a strong domestic system. At the under-16 level, it's non-existent. And at the senior and under-23 levels, the domestic system is basically dominated by one team, the Railways, because that's the only company that employs female cricketers. So because the domestic system isn't strong enough, there isn't enough depth right now for a women's IPL. Mm-hmm. That's the first reason a women's IPL should not happen now. But there should be a start. There should be exhibition matches held alongside the IPL, because the power of the IPL is visibility. And so many people need to know that women play cricket, and exhibition matches can achieve that first.
Hmm.
Alongside maybe a 5-year plan for a full-fledged women's IPL.
So you think that it should start from, we should go back to the basics, right? And start off with state-level tournaments and make them actually popular and grab attraction there, and then move to the IPL.
But I'm not really expecting state-level tournaments to grab popularity, because even the Ranji Trophy, unless a big India player plays,
yeah,
doesn't grab popularity. You know, nobody goes, nobody watches, okay, hardly any reporters, that kind of thing. Mm. But I do require domestic tournament to be strong enough so that when these girls are under the limelight, they will be playing a really, really strong brand of cricket, the kind that the Indian team played.
Mm.
So that level of cricket has to be prevalent in domestic cricket first before we can talk about women's IPL. And this basically is slightly an indictment. The fact that we're not ready for a women's IPL in terms of the skill levels is also an indictment of the lack of development of women's cricket at the grassroots by the BCCI.
Hmm. And to get a stage where there are enough women playing cricket professionally, Snehal, surely there have to be enough scholarship schemes and academies dotted around India. I don't know exactly where these academies are based, but I'm sure they're probably concentrated in certain parts of India more than in other parts. Because yes, talent and hard work plays a role, but statistically speaking, you have to come across an academy or some coach who is willing to take you to the top. And do you think enough is being done to make sure enough girls have access to these academies?
Yeah, that's absolutely right, that you do need these academies to happen for women's cricket to develop. But enough is being done is an interesting question, because it begs the question, enough is being done by who? Like, when I was in the UK, I observed that most counties have a responsibility to develop academies in different areas. Whereas here, it's mostly private coaching academies that spring up. And do the bulk of the coaching, or clubs, age-old clubs or even new clubs that form and have their own facilities, and that's where the coaching happens. So the question is it the BCCI's responsibility to develop these academies? Is it the BCCI's responsibility to develop these scholarships that you were talking about? I don't know the answer to that, because it's not the culture in India like it is in the UK for the state associations to take these things up. State associations pretty much take the finished product that these academies provide and fit them into the state teams. But that formula can't work for women's cricket, because there aren't enough females playing at the domestic level. So you need the state associations to run tennis ball school programs for women in order to drive school-going girls into these academies as they grow up, because there's not enough exposure to cricket at the school level.
So even during the World Cup final on Sunday, one of the commentators mentioned that the Indian squad haven't played much on international soil. And that means that as a team, they don't have a collective experience of playing together, which in turn means that they're not exposed to this kind of pressure from the crowd and from the media. And a lot of these ladies have gone straight from playing games in front of their family and friends to playing in front of large TV audiences. You know, you can see the pressure they were under towards the end. So it seems that even once an athlete climbs the ladder from being a state player to being a national player, that still doesn't ring any bells with the BCCI or the Ministry of Sports to really help them out and give them more exposure, right?
Well, a couple of things there. The Indian team did play quite a bit of international games leading up to this World Cup, a lot more than previous previous teams. But that's essentially because of the ICC policy that this happened. So probably 80% of those matches were ICC mandated matches. Second thing is, yeah, there is a big gap between domestic and international cricket. There is a big difference between playing in front of literally nobody and playing in front of 28,000 people. So the domestic system does need to create players who can play under pressure. And right now, because the domestic system is dominated by one team, that doesn't happen. You know, there aren't a lot of pressure matches. There are more one-sided matches in the domestic circuit. So the gap is even bigger at the international level. So it probably one of my suggestions for this is to increase the number of companies besides the railways who are giving employment to girls, because the railways provides permanent jobs on sports quota basis, and naturally most of the talent goes there. But if there are other teams like Air India, Bank of Baroda, other public companies, Indian Oil, that employ girls, then the domestic system will balance out, you know, in 10 years' time. So that is something that needs to happen. Maybe a corporate trophy which the BCCI had for men, so that these other teams can field their girls in a competition, is probably one of the biggest long-term reforms that Indian cricket needs.
But the fact that these ladies, you know, they got to the final with not as much experience as the men's team, and it's already something to celebrate in itself. You know, I wonder how much better they could be if they had more support.
Oh, absolutely. And they were like, you know, a few good decisions away from winning the World Cup. So that's always been the case, that this team has performed above its potential because India is such a talent-rich country in terms of cricket. You know, in Australia, I came across a ground where they had a sign outside the stadium saying "players wanted," which isn't a problem in India because you have so many people playing cricket. Even the number of females playing cricket in India is probably larger. I'm just guessing, but probably larger than anywhere else in the world, just because of the size of the population. So because India is such a talent-rich country, they do really well. They punch above their weight as compared to the support that other countries are getting. But yeah, it is high time that they get the same level of support, same level of development in the grassroots that most other countries have been benefiting from for the last 10 years.
And recently, during the Wimbledon Championships, Andy Murray made a rather bold statement and stood up for the female side of the sport in tennis, and he called for female players to get equal billing on the show courts. And during the Wimbledon Championships, we have the centre court and we have court number one. And court number one had 3 matches in one day, so there were 2 male matches and one of them was a female match. And Andy Murray, and I'm quoting over here, he said that, "I think ideally you would have 2 men's and 2 women's games on the centre court." So Andy advocated for his fellow female tennis players, and it really was, you know, it was very refreshing to see, considering that even in tennis, such a popular sport, there is still a wage gap. And is this a common sight in the cricket scene? Do the male players of the Indian cricket teams take a stand for the women's Indian team as well? And do you think they do enough?
Well, there's a crucial difference between the Murray example and the male players in the Indian team example, is that the male players in the Indian team are under the BCCI, whereas Murray is an individual player in an individual sport. So I would be really shell-shocked if I saw any current Indian player saying something against the BCCI and for the women's team. But having said that, it's good to see a lot of the male players coming out and tweeting their support for the women's team during this tournament. It was, you know, they have huge fan bases, and just that single tweet can do so much. Sachin Tendulkar put out a number of tweets. All the current number male players in the team put out a number of tweets, and that is good to see. It's not something that has necessarily happened before. I do know from some of the experiences of the players that when they have shared practice opportunities with the men's team, that most of the players have been very forthcoming with sharing notes and comparing experiences, passing on advice of playing at certain grounds and stuff like that. So given an opportunity, you know, I'm sure most of these male players will definitely step forward and help the girls in whatever cricketing way they can, and vice versa. They're probably, you know, going to appreciate the talents that the girls have. On the public stage, it's good to see them tweeting about it, but standing up for women's sport, I don't see that happening.
But do the men's team and the women's Indian team, do they have much interaction in general at all?
Not a lot, but not, for example, I know table tennis is very side by side. All the men's and women's tournaments often happen side by side. So
yeah,
the men's and women's team will travel together. But that isn't the case with the women's team because the tournaments are in separate schedules at separate places. There's only been one occasion where the Indian team has played double headers, which is basically India playing Australia in a T20, immediately followed by India men playing Australia men in a T20. So on that occasion, they do overlap, they do share hotels, practice facilities and stuff like that. But like I said, it's been just been one or two occasions.
But why does it not happen in cricket then? Because with table tennis, as you said, we travel together, and we don't just travel together, but we, as well, especially in my club, we train together, the males and the females. So we sort of understand each side of the sport. We know we help our male counterparts, and the male table tennis players help us as well. So do you think this would really benefit the women's team, for example, if they not just trained together but had more interaction and maybe, as you said, share experiences? Like, how would that help them?
Well, training together, I'm pretty sure it does happen to some level because most female players do train with boys, clubs, teams, and, you know, the same place where the elite athletes also train, and vice versa. Like Virat Kohli's club in Delhi has also nurtured a number of high-level Indian female players. But I don't know how feasible that is because the tournament schedules are completely different. The Indian women's team operates under something called the ICC Women's Championship, which mandates who plays who and where. Whereas the men's team operates under something which is quite fluid, but it's supposedly called the Future Tours Program. And they have their own agendas in terms of scheduling tours, which generally center around television rights. So it's there are countries which are overlapping these schedules as much as possible. South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, England. Try to make sure that tours of the same country overlap. For example, if India men are coming over, they try and put India women at the same time and have those double header T20s. So double headers are the biggest opportunity for this overlap to happen in a bilateral series. The World T20s, as in the World Cup of T20 cricket, is also played in an overlapping manner with the women's tournament and the men's tournament going on at the same time, but not necessarily the same venues. They will have overlaps on the semi-final and final where you have again double headers. But now the decision has been made that the women's sport is strong enough and should stand on its own. So the next World T20, which is in 2018, will be a standalone women's event and the men's event will be separate. So it has its pros and cons.
Hmm. Well, coming back to your cricket career, Snehal, I spent a lot of time trying to explain to Ankita about the technicalities behind what happened in your bowling ban. And from what I understand, you were penalised due to the degree of your elbow in your bowling action. And you spoke about how fixing up the technicalities in your action was a tough job because of your hyperextended elbow.
But Snehal, I wanted to know, as an athlete, sometimes there are so many things that you cannot control, and having hyperextended elbows is definitely really not in your hands. So I still cannot get my head around what the problem actually was there. How do you even measure this angle? How did they find out? I mean, can you explain this in layman terms for a noob like me?
Okay, so it wasn't, as in having hyperextended elbows added to the problem. But the problem was that my action had gotten to a point where my elbow was bending beyond the permitted level. And they measure this basically in a lab in Perth, which is where the testing happened, where they put small infrared markers on your wrist, on basically all your joints. And then they map an infrared image of you bowling.
Oh my God.
And then they measure the angles between the joints. Yeah, it's pretty complicated.
She's like, cricket is a science?
I'm like, cricket is science now.
Yeah, so that was the measurement that happened, but you get to that stage if by the naked eye somebody, an umpire or a match referee, thinks that this might be going a point higher than it is, you know, normal. So that's what happened in my case. An umpire said that, you know, it might be going a little bit higher. The measurement test actually showed that it was going slightly higher. So then I spent 6 months getting it back within that range. And after that, I was tested again. And then they said, okay, fine, now you're okay to play international cricket. You're okay to bowl in international cricket again. So that's basically the process in short.
And at the age of 31, Snehal, you're a writer, you're a broadcaster, YouTuber, but it's still possible to play the game at this age. So we were surprised and curious to know why you retired at such a young age.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, Mithali is 34, Julan is 34. So age is not as much of a number as it used to be probably. But for me, I took the decision because I had made, I was playing the best cricket of my life. I was as fit as I had been in my career towards when I took the call. And I had made a concerted effort to really, you know, get back into the Indian team and take things forward from there. But like you said, not everything is in your control. The results didn't work out as much as I hoped they would, and my comeback time frame into the Indian team did not go as to plan. And then I basically decided to take a call because I knew that there were other skills I had that I could develop, and as long as I was playing cricket competitively, it's pretty much your full-time job, you know, give time and effort to a lot of other things. So I knew writing was something that I could do long-term, so it was basically like a career switch from, you know, how people switch from IT to management roles. I saw it something like that. I could have continued in the cricketing role for a while. And who knows, you know, I could have gotten back to the top over there. But this is something that I wanted to do. And I thought this is the right time to give it the time.
But was it really a smooth transition from being so physically active, you know, from a physically demanding lifestyle to go into something quite far from that?
That's an interesting question. So, initially, there's a little bit of, you know, you do enjoy the not having to get up in the morning a little bit for the first few months. But after that, I pretty much got into some kind of physical exercise in my life. It was either through some kind of gym work or running work or, you know, just going on hikes with my dog. So, physical exercise will always be a big part of my life. Cycling, for example. So, I had to keep that constant, otherwise I would go crazy in terms of some physical exercise. Not, if not, you know, 6 days a week, at least 3 or 4 days a week. But it wasn't a very difficult transition because I had already started blogging while I was playing. And that's basically how my writing got picked up by a website as a player. So I knew that I had the skills to write. And it is just about giving them more time and developing them. So the writing transition wasn't very difficult. And the fact that I was writing about sport, mostly cricket, kept me continuously in touch with the game. So there wasn't like a vacuum in my life. It wasn't like, you know, all of a sudden it just stops. It's just taken on a different form. So I don't really miss it. I don't really think that, you know, oh, I want to go back and play. I'm desperate to go back and play. I do play the match here in Pune where I live once in a while. So it's not a complete cut off because I'm in the field. I'm just doing something, a different aspect of cricket.
Well, that brings us to the end of this conversation, Snehal. I was just telling Ankita before we recorded that you're the kind of person I could sit in a cafe with for hours and just have an endless discussion on everything. But we had Ankita as a third wheel here today, so we had to keep it simple.
To be fair, I might not be that interested in the technicalities behind the sport, but I'm extremely proud to see, you know, our ladies take up the international stage in any sport. And this conversation has actually allowed me to see women's sport through another prism. And I cannot wait to see all the changes that will happen soon, thanks to women like you, Snehal, and everyone who played on Sunday. It makes me really proud to be an Indian right now.
Yeah, those guys are the real heroes. They're making the stories. I'm just telling them.
Yeah. Well, Snehal, if anyone would like to follow you, what's the best way?
Well, my Twitter account is probably where I'm most social media-ish active. So that's at Snehal Pradhan. I also have my own YouTube channel where I post cricket tutorial videos and a number of cricket-related blog items which I've done from the World Cup, including some player interviews and stuff. So I like basically developing that as, you know, a lot of people ask me, why don't you get into coaching? This is my way of coaching. So if you are somebody who would like to learn a little bit about cricket, then you can head there. I also have my Facebook page where I'm not as active as my Twitter. So yeah, Twitter and sometimes Instagram is the best place.
So thank you so much for coming on the show, Snehal. It's been an absolute delight to talk to you.
Same here.
Thank you, sir. And thank you, dear listeners, for joining in on our conversation with Snehal. We hope you enjoy this conversation as much as we did.
And while you're on social media stalking Snehal, do check us out at Desi Outsiders. You can also send us your thoughts, feedback and questions to mail@desioutsiders.com. And please don't forget to rate and review our podcast on iTunes. And don't forget to tell your friends about us as well. So until next week, I'm Ankita.
And I'm Meenal.
And we are the Desi Outsiders.